This is North South.
Hey, it's Tim Kawakami here, North and South, with my co-host, Los Angeles Times, Dylan Hernandez. Extra show today. Okay, we're doing an extra one. It's Friday morning. Just the events are driving it. And I think we want to just discuss some of the things that have happened with Shohei Ohtani, Ippy Muzuhara, a big, big development yesterday. And I want to talk a little about our memories and our thoughts and our reflections on O.J. Simpson's death. Not that we were in the middle of anything, but this is just a monumental and incredibly controversial, incredibly dark part of the American sports psyche and memories. Dylan, first, obviously, we're the Ohtani podcast, proudly so. The federal prosecutors have a press conference today, announced a lot of incredible details. I mean, I couldn't believe how many details they put out there. Essentially, they're just saying, this is all Ippe. Here's exactly what we've got on him. I just couldn't believe how conclusive it was in their minds. Maybe it is just a slam dunk thing, and Ohtani was not involved in the gambling at all and had this money stolen from him. But, man, I was stunned by the force and the level of the details and everything pointing to it. It was all Mizuhara and not Ohtani. What struck you about that whole process of what happened yesterday?
I guess it's just how fast everything came together, too, right? Not only was it detailed. I mean, you're thinking about a government investigation, you know, and you write usually the speed at which large institutions work. You kind of think, is going to take a while for it to happen. What is this, like 3 weeks? I mean,
amazing, you know, incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the guy. You know, completely, you know, again, like you said, the detail, just the text messages between Mizuhara and the bookie, you know, the amounts of money. I mean, that to me, I guess, was the mind-blowing part of it, right? It was the scale of this thing. You know, the amounts stolen from Ohtani, you know, in addition to that, like the amount that like Mizuhara gambled, you know.
$170 million? I mean,
yeah, geez. Something like that. I mean, it was insane, yeah. You know, and I guess, you know, it's right. There's like a very interesting detail in there about how, you know, when they checked Ohtani's phone, there was no record of him ever having logged into his own bank account from that phone. So he never like probably was checked his balance, which could kind of explain how this happened, you know. And, you know, and I think this kind of goes back again to something I probably mentioned earlier here about how, you know, again, the way he's kind of been presented, right, at least like from the time that he was in Japan, about just kind of, you know, he just likes baseball, doesn't really care about anything else. And you're kind of seeing it kind of laid out here, right? And I think, you know, even, you know, when people like lie to people, right? I mean, you know, or steal from people, you know, they find targets, right? I mean, you know, if Mizuhara had, you know, judged Ohtani to be somebody that's going to be checking his account every week, that's not going to be the guy he's going to steal from, you know? And the fact that, again, that this could happen so easily, again, it kind of brings you back to this thing of like, man, maybe kind of that's all there is there, you know? And I think I brought up the example last time of, you know, his walk year last year when he was talking about, hey, I'm not looking ahead to free agency. And I'm kind of thinking like, there's no way he's not thinking about this. And again, he pitched his way to an injury that might've cost him $100 million, you know? And so I guess, yeah, it's just kind of, again, just the scale of everything, it's hard to kind of wrap your brain around all this, you know, that it really is, I guess, just that simple. What were your thoughts just kind of reading?
Yeah, it's like if you wanted it to make it as clear as possible, as perfectly, undeniably, well, everything's deniable, but like this is it. Shohei Ohtani was speaking the truth. He did not know about this. We found every level of detail we needed, and here it is in 3 weeks as fast as possible. That's what it is. Now you might say it was too fast, it was too much, it was like this is your overwhelm, you know, like it's almost like you're, you know, it's to try to prove something beyond the shadow of a doubt within the speed of light, like you're just like boop, 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 everything is just happening. But sometimes the simplest thing is the truest thing. Occam's razor. Maybe he really didn't know. And maybe he didn't know until that, you know, with the second game in Korea, when he literally, when Ippe told the team and then told Ohtani, like, this is the way it would roll out. I don't think I expected it to happen in a matter of weeks, but there's nothing there that you would go, okay, that's a little bit, other than the speed of it, right? The speed of it is the only, like, Jesus Christ, what did they have the whole thing booked before he even, you know, did a press conference? But if you had to, like, okay, what do we need to see to prove to ourselves, you know, not court of law, but to ourselves, that Ohtani was speaking the truth? These are all the things. Freaking a text from Mizuhara to the bookie, technically, I am guilty. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's all there. It feels like, you know, a little too obvious, a little too on the nose, but sometimes on the nose is what is true. So it fits the whole process, just tells you how clunkily they handled it in the get, right? His friggin' people are the ones who put Mizuhara out there to ESPN for him to say that he loaned me the money and he knew, and then had to go back on it and saying, well, he didn't know I stole it. It's just this really – that means Ohtani's handlers did not know about any of this. Mm-hmm. And, like, not even, like, check with Ohtani. Like, hey, we're going to put him out there, and he's going to say that you loaned him the money. They didn't even check with Ohtani. But, again, that goes to the – nobody knew. Like, except for Ohtani, like, the things that he was ignoring, he just was completely ignoring them. It is amazing, and I think this is over essentially for Ohtani. Would you agree with that? Like, this is essentially, this is the federal government, and there's certainly not MLB's investigation is not going to be more thorough than that, right? They're like, okay, good, everybody, we're all clear here, and you understand why, and there are cynical reasons why, but there's also probably logical reasons. This, what are they going to do? What are they going to find more than, you know, Mizuhara saying these things and no record of Mizuhara and Ohtani talking about it. That is one potential thing where you could go raise your eyes. Like, they were together constantly. Ohtani's one guy with him who spoke the language throughout baseball, all these baseball seasons. The guy was betting 19,000 times in like a 4-year, you know, period. And Ohtani had no idea. Like, he never brought it up and he never bet on baseball. Like, those are things I think you can raise. But at this point, I think it's done as far as Ohtani. Maybe the emotional after effect is still going, but from a legal, baseball suspension, all that stuff, I think it's over. Would you agree with that, Dylan?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and as I was kind of reading the complaint yesterday, and I was in there when the press conference, it's kind of took me back again when in 2017, when I went to go visit Japan in his last year over there, and I dropped by his high school and I was talking to, you know, his high school coach, and you know, it was right. And the guy tells me at the time, like, yeah, no, he's going next year. You know, we had this conversation and he told me, he kind of recounted that conversation that they had about, you know, whether he should go at 23, which is what he wound up doing. And, you know, he had to sign basically as an amateur player then, right? Had he waited 2 more years, he could have come as an unrestricted free agent, signed for like $200 million. And, you know, one of the things I went back and I read the story that I wrote then, and you know, the coach said he told Ohtani, you know, dreams are important, but you're in the real world now, you know. And he said this with, you know, right. And I do think it was kind of meant to be kind of this positive thing, because in the end, you know, he's like, yeah, but he still told me he wanted to go. You know, that's just like him. But there was a bit of kind of concern in there, you know, and he told me too, this story about how, you know, I guess Ohtani's paychecks from the Nippon Ham Fighters used to be deposited into his parents' bank account. And his mother, Ohtani's mother, was so worried that she was going to raise, right, that her child was going to basically be financially illiterate. So she opened a bank account for him and every month dropped in $1,000. You know, at the end of the year, she checked it. Actually, there was more money in there because, you know, he had accrued some interest, right? And so this all kind of fits in that sense, right? This kind of, you know, and even with that high school coach, I just kind of remember too, right? And you kind of have to remember, I think, kind of the cultural differences too, right? Where, you know, I remember at some point I was explaining to him, right? There was I was talking to him about the Kenta Maeda contract, you know, and where when Maeda signed with the Dodgers, they were concerned about his elbow. He signed for, I believe it was like a $3 million base salary. And he could make up to like 15 or something a year in incentives, right? And kind of from like a Japanese standpoint, it's like, hey, I want to be paid. You know, I'm going to earn my pay, basically. Mm-hmm. Yep. What that ended up happening, though, was the Dodgers very liberally, you know, would move him into the bullpen, you know, take him right back into the rotation, back into the bullpen. And I kind of had to explain to him, like, in the way it works kind of in our country is that contracts kind of protect players, right? Kenta Maeda is making $20 million. The front office is going to think twice before moving him into the bullpen, because what happens if you do that? The owner is going to ask, hey, I'm paying $20 million a year for this guy. Why is he in the bullpen? You know, and so, you know, you take all that, right? I mean, a culture that I think does kind of look at money as being a little bit gross in a way, right? Not that people don't like money, but you can't be as openly, you know, happy about money as you are here. And then you kind of take, even within that population, somebody that's very apathetic to it, you know, as unbelievable as this kind of seemed, you know, because honestly, as the story was kind of unfolding, I was kind of thinking, okay, well, you know, because there were rumors going around that there's a bigger number out there, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, if that comes out, how do you kind of explain that? You know, that's going to be kind of harder to explain away, but you were talking about, again, a person who lives kind of on the extremities of a fairly extreme culture, and I guess it is possible.
Well, now the number is what, 16 million? It was what, 4.5, yeah. Now it's 16. It is amazing. It's just the sheer volume of what we're looking at. Just the, you know, the idea that this guy was, you know, what is it, 20 times a day on betting on college soccer? I mean, just random, just going through the sending texts to the bookie, like after the ESPN and LA Times stories. It's like the dunderheadedness of this to go, you know, to get down millions of dollars and just have, oh yeah, you know, I can pay. Oh, I'm really bad at this. I, you know, the one detail of the whole thing, you can bring up your own if you got that, I saw that really made me think this is exonerates Shohei Ohtani from any gambling part of this, is that the money that Mizuhara won went to a different account.
Yeah.
Like that real, like, why would, if you're a Shohei Ohtani and you're literally, if you are thinking the worst of this and you are putting, he's gambling and putting his name on money being sent to a bookie, why would there be a different account where the winnings go? Like that, that is the single thing out there beyond all else that really makes me think, okay, just knowing the way these guys think, that is proof of a dunderhead who is stealing from somebody and is trying to profit himself in, you know, strictly himself. That was amazing to me. That was a detail that I think, you know, maybe it's made up. I don't think it's made up. It's federal. These are federal prosecutors. That really clarifies it to me. You got one other than that one?
Well, the $325,000 he spent on baseball cards, I mean, that is just, you know, and then this whole thing too about, and I think we talked about this in some capacity too, just the fact that like Ohtani this whole time thought that CAA, his agency, was looking over this account, right? And it turned out, you know, and again, I still don't get that. You know, even again, I see Major League Baseball teams kind of operating, right? The Dodgers have like a few Japanese employees that they don't seem to listen to a whole ton, you know? And in this case, it sounded like basically CAA had nobody, right? According to this thing, right? You know, Ohtani's agent would occasionally hire somebody, you know, kind of like on a part-time basis to like interpret here and there or whatever. But how they kind of left themselves, right? There was kind of, you know, I mean, his agency kind of failed him here too, you know? And again, you know, right? Usually, like, again, in this country, you have a lot of money, right? You have somebody taking care of your money, and then you hire somebody to, right, look over the people that are taking care of your money, and then you hire somebody else to police that guy. And again, I just think kind of the cultural thing, especially from the part of Japan that he's from too, you know, very rural area, you know, where I'm guessing they just never even like, right. Like his parents, you know, who do seem to kind of be involved in, at least the dad seems to kind of be involved in some of the business stuff he's got going on in Japan. They're just kind of not thinking to this point here, you know, and it's just, it is really kind of unfortunate for him, obviously. You know, that things kind of got to this point. But wow, yeah, just the scale of this is just,
it's incredible. You know, it's incredible. It's just one guy doing it. And I mean, if you're the bookie, like going, what? Okay. You know, I guess I assume, you know, this is going to at some point it's going to be exposed. I know when bookies live in different kinds of world, you know, Otani a little bit, you've asked him about this personally. I know it's unknowable. Do you expect Otani to address this, all of it, pretty soon, now that the federal prosecutors have announced all these things?
I'm not sure at this point that he would. You know, I kind of wonder if he would wait until the case is like completely, you know, whether, you know, Mizuhara pleads out or if there's a trial or whatever. I kind of wonder if he'll wait. You know, maybe he'll say something briefly, like that he's glad that it, you know, kind of got to this point. But I am kind of curious, you know, again, like, you know, kind of the emotional side of this thing, right? And you know, kind of going back, what was it, like a week and a half ago, whenever it was that I approached him in the clubhouse about, hey, you know, you talked the other day, but kind of didn't all add up. And again, the calmness with which he talked, you know, because again, like the, I think, I don't know, like as a normal person, I would think that the kind of typical reaction would be one of, right, you feel really betrayed, you know, you feel, I mean, maybe embarrassed, right, that, you know, that all this money just got taken from you. The fact that, like, right, he's actually, you know, started hitting even better since then, I think kind of says a lot, again, of just where he is, you know, in terms of compartmentalizing things. I do kind of wonder, right, in his kind of private moments, what that's kind of like. And I'm guessing we'll never find out, just because, again, just how kind of closed off he is and the way he's managed to kind of separate, you know, his on-field stuff from kind of the off-field stuff. And, you know, we're only obviously kind of, he only lets us into basically what we see on the field. You know, this is a guy who, keep in mind too, like, doesn't even, you know, I don't think that there's anyone who's even seen him like practice, right? You know, right. You know, the kind of typical baseball off-season stories that we all like writing about, right? We all, you know, we go visit a guy in his home and we follow him around for a day and he's training, you know, and, you know, Otani has never, from what I understand, like, let anybody into anything like that either. You know, he's been, just judge me what happens on the field, you know? And so, yeah, I'm guessing we're not going to find out too much about, like, kind of like his real private thoughts, you know, about this thing. But yeah, it's just an incredible story here.
And this is one little thing that we now know about, because the FBI got involved and because there was this bookie that they were already investigating. What if there's more stuff? I mean, I'm not saying more gambling stuff, but who knows where his money's gone? Who knows what's been, you know, if there was no monitoring of this, what about all this other stuff? Again, that's just me throwing it out there. And he's not the only player that we've heard about these sort of things. I don't mean to, you know, make any kind of, you know, wild, like, I'm just saying that's just one thing we know, because the FBI was already investigating these. Maybe that's the one thing where it's been money's disappeared, or we don't know. But I would tend to guess there's probably some other things, just money, financial, not illegal, just financial. And we'll see what systems he puts in place in order to have this not happen again. Like, he's rich enough, the contract is large enough, you know, we can all kind of like wave our eyes at $16 million. It's amazing, you know, that's a player making that kind of money. But, you know, yeah, what if this was somebody making $2 million a year? You know, what if this guy was, like, maybe his interpreter would never have been given that credit line, but still, it's a lot of money. It's like, this is a ton of money. All right, we'll get more Otani, I'm sure. We'll keep talking about this. I just, you know, this was fresh in a lot of people's mind. I didn't want to bug you yesterday, Dylan. I'm sure you had things you had to do, you had things you got to do today. Otani is constant. It is a universal beat at this point, but we're all fascinated. You know, the O.J. Simpson dies yesterday, and, you know, I didn't have a lot to say about it. Yes, I don't know in the moment. It's just this incredibly complicated situation. But I just want to ask you, like, what are your thoughts? What hits you when you see OJ dies? What was your experience going through that whole trial, through the white Bronco? Like, where were you during that? Were you in LA growing up at that point?
Well, I was in high school. Yeah. Yep. I remember, I think I saw the verdict in Mr. Shotwell's class. I think it might have been during brunch. But yeah, it's kind of a, you know, what I remember about then is, you know, I remember my dad, right, who, you know, he grew up in this country, obviously. You know, he came here, I think, in like 1960-ish, you know, and so he's kind of seen kind of American history kind of unfold before him. And I remember what he said at the time was kind of like, you know, after the trial, after the verdict got announced, he said, well, that's going to be it for affirmative action. And sure enough, a year or two later, you know, and I do kind of think that this was kind of the, I don't know, the, you know, point of origin for kind of like modern, right, white grievance politics, right? This was kind of like the one example of like something, right? They, you know, were literally, yeah, the race card got played, right?
Yeah.
And kind of these things that, you know, and obviously what's kind of unfortunate is that this is really just like a rich guy getting off. Right.
Yep.
And it's kind of been, and that's the thing, right? But it kind of got applied, like it got blanketed all over, right? And like people started complaining about like, well, I didn't get a promotion here because of this and that and blah, 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 whatever, you know. But yeah, and to be honest, like I still think like it's still kind of a raw thing, right? I mean, I think that one of the reasons you know, I think like a lot of people didn't want to talk about this too much yesterday because in a way it's still kind of unfolding right now. Right. And it's, I mean, in some ways it's gotten even worse. Right. I mean, I think that again,
a lot of ways.
I mean, now we're really here. Right. And, you know, so, you know, from that standpoint, it was just, yeah, everything about it is just, you know, just unfortunate.
Two deaths and a lot of frayed emotions and, you know, the polarization of America, which we talk a million times. But I'll just say when I was in L.A. at the L.A. Times when the murders happened and through the trial. And I just remember like after the next day after the murders, it was, you know, reported that O.J. Simpson's ex-wife had been murdered and someone else. And people, you know, was just constantly talked about. And I did think like, I know O.J. Simpson. I'm a sports writer. I didn't cover him or anything like that. But, you know, grew up in San Francisco. These are things I identified. City College San Francisco, went to USC. It's very, you know, very California life. But I didn't trade it to the 49ers at the end of his career. I kind of, you know, I knew how big he was. But it's like, you've been retired for a lot of years, been on TV. But, like, this is a huge thing. Like, this stops the world? Like, and that was before the first, as the beginnings of, suspicions, like, you know, that first day. I remember I'm listening to the Jim Rome radio show in LA, and someone called and said, oh yeah, there's a history of him beating Nicole. Like, and it was just like, whoa, like it was, you could even tell Rome was like, wait a minute, like where are we going here? And that just became this echoing thing in LA, people in LA talking about their relationship. It just was, to me, again, to try to specify this, just like this big sports figures are always famous. They're just going to be always famous. It is just the thing that continues. And that's what kind of hit me. I knew O.J. Simpson was big. I knew it was in commercials. I knew it was in some movies. I didn't feel that. And then it just became the, you know, obviously the conversation for years and continue. And I'd say, how long can this go? Well, it kept going. And he's charged with murder and the trial and just the dichotomy of what different, you know, pieces of the society we're thinking about. And, you know, my theory, I'll throw it out there, not that it means anything. It's just amazing that the only, you know, that the former great athlete who's charged with murder happens to be the most famous one. Like, it's always the most famous one. Shohei Ohtani and the gambling thing. It couldn't be a minor player. It had to be Shohei Ohtani. Player to contract the HIV virus. It couldn't be anybody less than Magic Johnson, former great player to die in a airplane, in a helicopter. It had to be Kobe Bryant. I don't know why, and maybe it's just because of the sheer volume of their fame makes us project larger things and makes it like the only thing that ever happened had to happen to this person. But I'm just astounded at that these things are kind of the locus of them are always to the biggest. Heavyweight champion accused of rape had to be Mike Tyson. Like, it's just, I am always like, just it never seems to be anything but the biggest athlete or former athlete. Again, there's something I think that the magnetic pull of fame probably happens in other categories too, but the one we're looking at is sports, the one we talk about is sports, and it had to be OJ. I don't know. It just, it happened to be OJ Simpson. And I was remember the white Bronco chase. I was at covering a Dodger game, and we were not watching the Dodger game. We were watching the chase. And I know the NBA Finals game was going on. It's just like this, your head was exploding with what's going on here. Like, we go down to the, I don't even remember the Dodgers won or lost the game. We go down to the manager's office. It might have been Lasorda. I can't even remember now. And like, that's all we were talking about. We weren't talking about the game with the writers and the manager. We're just talking about, and the players, I think afterwards was like, what went on here? Just a stoppage of time. It's like this moment that it, where things, this is it. This was before the chase. And then there's the world after the chase. It just felt like that. You knew it was happening as your head was spinning. No grand conclusion of that other than O.J. Simpson was last a good football player like 50 years ago. And it's still important. It's still something that signifies something. His death is talked about internationally. That is something that speaks to America. It speaks to sports society. It speaks to fame, but I am struck by that. And I wasn't going to get you on to talk about this, Dylan. I just kind of wanted to let it sink. And I thought today, well, let's talk about it a little bit. So you and I, let's kind of expand a little bit. And also, you know, North and South is a California podcast and is certainly a California person. But the range of emotion, the range of reaction is just, you know, I can't believe it happens to the biggest people are always the ones involved in the biggest stories. Maybe that makes sense. Maybe it's dumb of me to point that out, but I just keep seeing it over and over. And I don't know. There's got to be some explanation for this, and I don't have it. But
I kind of wonder if it's just because those types of people like live on, they're such extremes, right?
Yeah.
You know, and even again, you know, I mean, let's just take Ohtani here. His apathy for money is so extreme, right? Yeah. That like we can't even kind of conceive, you know. And I think the last time again I was on, when we were talking about this, and I kind of was talking about the way he kind of reacted, and I said, you know, I wouldn't read too much into this just because we don't think the way he does, right? Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of times we kind of will place ourselves in, you know, in the position of these athletes and say, like, well, if I was there, right? You know, you look at like O.J. Simpson. It's like he's got so much to lose, right? Why would you do this? It's like, yeah, but he doesn't think like us, right? Mm-hmm. And because he doesn't think like us is probably why he got to where he got to in the first place, you know? And so I do kind of wonder if it's some of that. I, you know, what I was kind of, I don't know, what I thought about too was, they were, you know, they were showing the 30 for 30 one time. I was still, God, I was covering the, this one might have been 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. And I just remember there was a Latin American player, young kid, and he's looking up at watching the TV and he's seeing the Bronco chase scene, you know, and he's like, what's going on? Like, he thought it was happening now.
Yeah.
You know? And it did give me this thing like, oh, like, and I had to explain O.J. Simpson to him, you know. I remember after the, you know, kind of the, you know, the Yu Darvish Gurriel incident at the World Series in 17. Mm-hmm. The next day, a bunch of Japanese reporters came to me one by one asking me, why is this a big deal? You know, because they didn't understand, you know, it's just like, well, what's, yeah, our eyes are kind of slanted. Like, what's the big deal here? You know, yeah. And there's a lot of like racial stuff, I think, right? I do think that this is like a very much like, it's a very American story, you know, in that. And, you know, I think it's been, you know, the previous century, obviously, it was kind of the big issue in America. And I think it still remains unresolved, you know. And hopefully we kind of get to a point where, you know, right, nobody understands it in a way where you kind of have to kind of explain the context.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's,
you know, here's the thing. We don't, I mean, it's such a, right, the thing is so pervasive right now that we don't even have to explain to anybody, mm-hmm. like, what's really kind of going on here. We all kind of, like, just feel it, you know. And so hopefully we get to a point where these things have to kind of be explained because we're past that, but
not past it. It almost makes me feel like to get past it, you have to go through the very extreme because you do have the groups of people who have resisted it for decades and centuries and who see that it might be coming to an end. We see the polling on, you know, the young generations. They don't see the same kind of divides. They don't feel the same polarization. And I think that pressure is on perhaps the older generations where the split is harsher, the reaction is harsher. And that's what I think we're seeing now. Right? That's what we're feeling. That group is feeling panic. And now we're getting into far different things here, but I think it's worth discussing. And that's the last of it. They're fighting it. That last they know, they give it up and they let logic and sanity and humanity prevail, that they'll lose because they're anti-humanity. But okay, that's enough of this. But I wanted to bring these two. Appreciate you. I just jumped on. I said, hey, you want to do something? And Dylan said, yeah, let's do it. So a little Ohtani's update, which I think is important. And I think OJ Simpson's death is just something to reflect on, something to discuss a little bit. All right, Dylan, thanks for coming on.
All right, thank you.